Hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning, you may be seated. Justice Piper will be joining us. The first case on our calendar is 04-1877, State of Ohio versus Mark Saxon. Mr. Regas.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Alan Regas. I'm an assistant prosecuting attorney in the Cuyahoga County Prosecutor's Office. I would ask to reserve 2 minutes, Your Honor.
You watch your time on the clock.
Thank you. Your Honor, we asked this court to hear this case to decide the disposition of this case. We are not factually opposed in this case, but we ask that this court find that the 8th District Court of Appeals erred by vacating the entire aggregate sentence in this case, because the court was bound by the procedural rules, Appellate Rule 12, Crim Rule 52, and specifically by statute in disposition in this case by Revised Code 2953-08G. The disposition in this case took a sentence that was imposed on a felony of the third degree, a four-year sentence, that was not complained of in error, no argument was made that that four-year sentence was in error, and yet vacated that sentence. There was no assignment of error as to count the felony of the third degree sentence in this case. There was no reasons given why that four-year sentence was in error. And we ask that the court determine what the meaning of a sentence is under 2953-08G in the dispositional authority. And I think what has happened under Senate Bill 2, once it's come in with very specific sentencing provisions, courts, the lower courts, as well as the appellate courts, and in this case, I think it's apparent, we don't know what a sentence is for disposition at the appellate level upon review. A sentence in this case, as the dissent noted and as the state argues, there are two sentences imposed in this case, one on the felony three and one that was imposed in error on the felony four. The 8th District only had the dispositional authority under the rules and under 2953-08G to vacate that sentence, which was complained of or found to be in plain error. And that would have been the sentence, the four-year sentence imposed for the felony of the fourth degree. As noted by the dissent in this case, the entire or the aggregate sentence imposed. Now, 2953-08G says that the appellate court may vacate the sentence imposed. And the state asked this court to determine that the sentence imposed is that sentence imposed for each count, and that under a felony sentencing case upon multiple counts or in multiple cases, that in that situation, each sentence is to be individually addressed, individually analyzed, and individually disposed of upon the appellate level. The confusion comes where, under prior to Senate Bill 2, a sentence was an aggregate sentence. There was very little challenge to the sentences. And a sentence such as the one in this case that was imposed in contravention of law, where the court imposed a four-year sentence where it could only impose a 6 to 18 month sentence. That kind of sentence could have been appealed prior to Senate Bill 2. Now, almost every sentence is appealable under Senate Bill 2. And the structure in reviewing the propriety of those sentences depends upon specific reasons and articulable findings and reasons for each sentence. If this court doesn't determine that the 8th District exceeded its authority and vacated this aggregate sentence in error, that will lead to problems with most sentencing cases. What's developed is, upon review of multiple counts cases, is two competing philosophies in reviewing what 2953-08G allows in vacating or modifying the sentence imposed. The determination of that sentence and the 10th District Court of Appeals, and in some cases in the 8th District, has proposed that there's a sentence packaging doctrine when there's multiple counts sentenced.
Does this case impact the sentencing packaging doctrine, in your view?
Yes, it does, because...
Well, that's been upheld by all the federal circuits and all the other appellate districts. Isn't that pretty generally accepted?
It has been accepted as in certain sentencing schemes. However, under Senate Bill 2, we have to start with the premise that each felony sentence is imposed for each charge or each conviction. And given that, and under Criminal 32, each sentence has to be imposed. Under 292914, it talks of a singular sentence that needs to be imposed upon each felony offense. When we look to this court's opinions, especially in Comer, the outline presumes that the sentencing judge will look at the felony, look at the sentence, in this case it was a felony of third degree, and determine the circumstances and impose a 1, 2, 3, 4, or a 5-year sentence.
Counsel, excuse me, but I noticed that the briefs didn't refer to the definition of sentence under 292901FF. And let me just read it because it's short and see how that impacts what you're saying. It still may not solve the problem. It says sentence means the sanction or combination of sanctions imposed by the sentencing court on an offender who's convicted of or pleads guilty to an offense. Now, would you say that that's ambiguous in light of what you're talking about?
That highlights the problem, Your Honor. In that case, the sentence is being used both in the singular sentence as one act to punish one crime and the aggregate sentence. And we need to determine what 295308, when it refers to the sentence, means. I would say because of the definition incorporates both the singular and the aggregate concept of the sentence, that this court needs to determine that issue.
But this sentence was, these sentences were to run concurrently. Does that make any difference?
Yes, I believe it does. Because once it's, for example, if this sentence is vacated in its entirety, the trial court, especially without any guidance or any determination as to the propriety of the first sentence, is left not knowing whether that 4-year sentence was properly imposed, was not properly imposed. It would also allow a trial court, I would argue, to consider this sentence again and look to see perhaps that concurrent 4 years that the court attempted to impose was wrong, could possibly move to a concurrent or a consecutive sentencing structure under a de novo sentencing if only one sentence is deemed to be given in this case.
So what is the rule of law that you want this case to stand for when you leave here? What is the posture that you think all trial judges in Ohio should follow?
I think the trial judges should adhere to Senate Bill 2, examine each, I'd ask this court to instruct.
Well, how do we instruct them in this case what their conduct should be when they have this issue? What do the appellate judges say, and what is the rule of law from this court?
That under Senate Bill 2, a sentence, the disposition of a sentence, is that sentence found only to be an error, and that the sentences across, if it's found to be an error, and that sentences imposed across multiple counts or multiple cases are severable, and they're not inherently tied or packaged. I think because of the bottom-up sentencing that Senate Bill 2 presumes. It presumes that the court starts with the crime charged, the appropriate factors in light of that crime, and then moves on to the next count, builds into other sentencing, and that to look at it from the top up to say, well, in this case, the defendant got 4 years. He received a 4-year sentence. Let's go back and fill in the blanks under Senate Bill 2 requirements. Is it possible? Well, it's a concurrent case here, but the concept of sentencing under Senate Bill 2 is different. It starts from the bottom up.
You're saying separate counts rather than aggregate term? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. And in this case highlights it very simply, because there's only two counts, and one of the counts was not challenged, was not found to be an error, and yet it was vacated. And the only authority it could be vacated under would be 2953-08G, which talks about the sentence may be modified, vacated, or otherwise disposed
of. Well, it says that a case may be remanded for, the Court of Appeals may remand a case for sentencing de novo. That's what it says. That means all over again, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It does mean all over again, and I don't dispute that, but the...
But you want that only to apply to the one sentence complained of on the appeal.
Exactly.
And not the aggregate multiple sentences that comport or compose the final sentence.
That is correct, Your Honor. The four-year sentence was not an error. It should not be disturbed. We have a principle, the principles of finality are such that this four-year sentence should stand. It shouldn't be subject to, as I pointed out in my brief, what occurred in the State versus Moore cases, where the entire sentence was vacated. The trial court then addressed each and every sentence imposed, and then upon appeal was found to be in error by addressing items. But if we look at vacating sentences.
Say if on appeal, it wasn't appealed based on an erroneous length of time, but on some other issue, and the defendant was successful on appeal for the one count, and the other count stood. Would that necessitate a resentencing?
As to the count that is found to be an error. As I said, No.
Listen to what I said. If the defendant appealed two counts of in this case, and the appellate court found merit in one of the appeals and vacated the sentence and found that he, you know, for whatever reason, it was an invalid conviction or sentence and did not subject it to remand for resentencing, and the other error complained of, the other case or the other conviction stood, would that necessitate a resentencing?
It would necessitate a resentencing only on the count. It needs to be a limited remand is how I would answer that question. Hypothetically, if this had been a maximum sentence and a more than the minimum sentence complaint, and the maximum sentence was found, findings were lacking or it was not justified under the facts, then that count would need to go back. Whereas the second count, if it was found to be properly imposed and the reason is imposed, then that count would not be subject to further consideration or review by the trial court. So yes, we would have a de novo hearing, but that would be narrowed. The issue in the case would be narrowed. What happens if we have a wholesale vacation of the aggregate sentence is the trial court starts over, the principles of law of the case disappear because there's no more law of the case. The principles of res judicata are essentially disposed of. There is no more res judicata issues. Everything now can be re-raised, and that, upon that sentence, that defendant gets a new appeal. For example, in the last year or so, we've had resentencing vacations that come up, and then as soon as they get to the trial court, having never raised a Blakely issue or a Sixth Amendment challenge, these are now being raised. And because of the posture that the entire sentences were vacated, if that is now an option, and that's just one example, although I'm sure others would come in. We've had cases go back 2, 3, 4 times, and each time we keep coming up with new issues. And the principles of finality need to be addressed. And I ask that this court find that sentence, the meaning of sentence, is just that, a single sentence that's found to be an error.
Except that 01FF, as Justice Lansinger pointed out, defines a sentence as a combination of sanctions. That's what we have here, don't we? Two sanctions for conduct.
Yes, we do.
And so the statute says the Court of Appeals may vacate the sentence and remand, it can modify, obviously, but then, or vacate the sentence and remand the matter to the sentencing court. Why, how do we get around the definition of sentence?
Your Honor, as the sentence includes both the singular sentence, a sentence imposed for one, as well as the combination or the aggregate sentence. And I think we need to determine
Or, don't you? I mean, here we have aggregate. We have two sanctions, a combination of sanctions, don't we?
Yes, we have two sentences.
Why wouldn't that part of the definition of sentencing apply here? Because we don't have just one sanction. We had two sanctions.
It applies in the fact that because this statute encompasses both concepts and the definition encompasses both concepts, I'd ask that this court look to the procedural, the court's rules to resolve that issue. And under looking into the criminal rules and the appellate rules and the principles of review, an appellate court can't just throw out a valid sentence. It wasn't complained of. There was no assignment of error directed towards the 4-year sentence in this case. However, the appellate court took a valid legal sentence that was not challenged and not found to be an error and vacated it.
Right.
And I think that is where the court needs to look to the procedural rules and the principles of appellate review to interpret the meaning of the statute to determine that only sentences in the singular sense that are found in error can be reversed and sent back to remand. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Regas. Mr. Ryan.
Good morning. May it please this honorable court, my name is Thomas Ryan. I represent the defendant, Kali Mark Saxon, in this particular case. Again, at the plea hearing, Mr. Saxon pled guilty to a felony of the third degree, gross sexual imposition, and a felony of the fourth degree, gross sexual imposition. At a later date, at the sentencing hearing, the court improperly and incorrectly stated that Mr. Saxon pled guilty to two felonies of the third degree. So from the onset, from the get-go, that was incorrect, that was improper. The court then, of course, sentenced Mr. Saxon to 4 years on each count concurrently, which was obviously improper, which I raised with the lower court. The lower court then, of course, indicated in its language, in its ruling, as to that assignment of error, stated, sentence vacated in case remanded for resentencing. I submit to the honorable court that the lower appellate court acted absolutely properly in following the mandates and guidance of the statute 2953.08, which limits courts to two things, that the court of appeals may modify the sentence itself, or that it may remand for sentencing de novo. I submit what the state of Ohio is trying to do here is to carve an exception to go outside the legislature and legislative intent and outside the statute and come up with something that's not even called for under 2953.08G2. It just doesn't exist. I submit here that...
Is it your position that is discretionary with the appellate court, or is that an obligation of the appellate court to remand the entire sentence?
I submit that 2953.08 limits the court to either modifying the sentence itself or to remand the entire sentence for de novo hearing, meaning that it's got to remand the whole case.
So if you had a very long trial and you had 29 convictions and you succeeded on the appeal of only one, then that case has to go back down for all 29 counts to be resentenced with the full Comer hearing on every single point. That's your position?
That's my position, yes, based upon 2953.08. To do anything otherwise wouldn't make any sense from a logical, commonsensical viewpoint. Sentences do not occur in a vacuum. They do not occur in a vacuum. He pled guilty to several counts here. You can't say, well, I'm going to sentence you so-and-so on this one and do it on this one. It's a combination of both. Trial judges know that when reviewing the pre-sentence investigation, when hearing from the victims, prosecutors, defense counsel, and defendant, that it's a whole combination of factors in which the court makes its decision on what the sentence is ultimately going to be. I submit you can't isolate part of a sentence and ignore other parts of the sentence. It's a combination. Everything has to come together. To do otherwise doesn't make sense and is outside of what the Ohio Revised Code has been set forth in 2953.08 requires. To do anything otherwise wouldn't make sense. And
why couldn't the court, if this case was sent back and we accepted the res judicata type arguments on the counts that were not touched, why couldn't a judge go back and say, okay, this one already has a four-year term, I have the opportunity to resentence on the second count now, and I can adjust it accordingly because this part of it's already fixed. It's already been decided, and it's not been appealed, and it's not been reversed. And so they can make the adjustments with the count that they have the ability to resentence on.
But again, could the court do that? Absolutely. The trial court absolutely has that discretion to do so. But I submit that it's still a sentencing de novo. The court ultimately can make that decision and say that I properly and correctly made those findings to justify a four-year sentence from the onset, but it's still considered a sentencing de novo, that the court still, within its discretion, within its boundaries, has to look at it from a de novo viewpoint, which means it has to consider everything at that point, and that's what 2953.08.1 sets forth.
And when you say sentencing de novo, you're talking about sentencing hearing under 2919 with the prosecutor present, the defense counsel present, victims potentially notified, a full-blown hearing, and as Justice Stratton's example of 29 counts, a recitation of all the findings, all the reasons for each of the 29 counts. Potentially, of course, then at the second rehearing, or at this second resentencing, potentially allowing for additional error to be created because, let's say, a phrase was missing from one of the other 29 counts, and then potentially allowing for another appeal because the resentencing may have had some technical errors, correct?
That's correct, because that's what a de novo hearing is. Yes, obviously. I mean, that's what a de novo hearing is that it's a fresh start, it's a clean slate that you start from scratch. You start from step one, from square one, and that's what the statute contemplates.
That's your reading of the statute.
That's my reading of the statute. Yes, that's my reading of the statute. That's a de novo hearing or that the Court of Appeals can modify the sentencing itself. And that's what I submit that the trial court would be limited to based upon the appellate court's ruling in terms of that. It either modifies the sentence itself or remands for sentencing de novo. Again, this would allow for a full hearing.
Counsel, you don't feel that there's any burden upon the defendant to appeal or complain of the entire package of sentences in order to have this result that you're requiring here? Because in this case, the one count was not appealed.
Correct.
And so that count gets the benefit of a vacated status and a remand, even though it was never complained of.
Correct.
And you don't feel that there's a burden incumbent upon the defendant to raise an appeal in order for that to happen, that it just gets kind of tagged along onto the appeal where there is an issue?
Again, I think since it is a sentencing de novo, that you can't isolate one count from another. It's all under the same case number. It's all out of the facts and circumstances arising from the same incident. So I think that you can't isolate one count from another, and certainly the judge can't do that either.
Why not? Because that's just another fact that the judge takes into consideration in sentencing, that at this particular time, there's a amount certain or a time certain attached to this one count, and now I'm going to re-sentence on the count that needs to be corrected based on a certainty of what the other count has received. It's just another factor to take into consideration on the resentencing. Just like in the initial sentencing, the factors that the judge takes into consideration in fashioning a sentence. Why is that a wrong approach?
Because again, I think that 2953.08, and I keep going over this and over this again and again, but I think that limits what a court of appeals can direct a trial court to do. Court of appeals can either modify the sentence itself or remand it, vacate the sentence and remand it for sentencing.
I mean, I guess it all depends on whether we think that the word sentence means the aggregate sentence once it's been imposed and considered by the appellate court, or whether sentence can mean each sanction or punishment attached to each count, mm-hmm. Would you agree that that's the fine line that we have to look at, not whether there's an appropriateness for a resentencing on the whole or the, I mean, that's the ultimate outcome based on a definition that we're going to have to decipher.
And I think that's, I think that appears to be the issue here as to what a sentence is. But again, as Justice Lanzinger pointed out, the definition of sentence, citing 29.01, has to do in the definition, as Justice Moyer indicated, as well as a combination of sanctions, which I think ultimately...
Neither counsel cited that section. I'm curious. You don't think it's relevant? Or I mean, we're talking about a sentence, and we have a statute that defines a sentence, and nobody cites the statute. Is that because you don't think it's important here, or what?
No, because I still think that the legislature has spoken quite clearly in 2953.08 and what it can do, what it can do itself in terms of modifying the sentence itself, or mandating the trial court to have a sentencing hearing de novo.
Well, I guess no one, well, I, there wouldn't be much disagreement, I guess, if we weren't arguing over the definition of sentence that a court of appeals, the issue is whether it legally has the authority to vacate a sanction, a sentence or a sanction, whatever you want to call it, when there's been no error. Courts of appeals don't do that, and if they do, they get reversed, don't they? I mean, there was no error here, clearly, on the one charge, on the sentence on the one charge. And so the legal question then is, I'm just restating it, is what is the authority of the Court of Appeals to vacate something, a sanction that has not been challenged?
Well, I think the issue is, in addition to this court determining what a sentence is determining what de novo is. De novo, I think, is quite clear that requires a fresh start. Everything else prior to that is vacated, wiped clean, and you go back to step
as
one.
As to the
one.
Issue appealed, a de novo review as to the issue repealed or complained of or appealed. Now, an appellate court, in any case, is not going to look and has no authority to look at errors not complained of by the appellant, whether it's a civil case or a criminal case. That's just basic appellate procedure. And here you're saying, even though we didn't complain of the sentence that was attached to the one count, we want the appellate court, or the appellate court took it upon itself, to call that into error, which in essence is what happened here with an order for a remand and a resentencing.
Well, because I think that you can't have or isolate the separate counts for a defendant on the same case number. I don't think you can act, I don't think a trial court can act in a vacuum when determining a proper and just sentence.
If a defendant complains of is convicted of a rape and a murder, and it's not capital, I'll take it out of the realm of a capital case, and is convicted on both counts and is appealed, and the court reverses on the rape. Now, you're going to say that, and they didn't appeal the murder.
Okay.
Is the court going to vacate the murder?
Well, let's assume hypothetically that I had raised a Blakely-type issue because it was... even though the court found that Mr. Saxon previously served a prison term, that I had raised a Blakely issue saying that it wasn't by judicial fact finder that more than minimum sentence was justified, and then the Court of Appeals affirmed that, and I would have raised it at that point. Would that then cause or justify a different outcome? I don't think so. I think that you can't isolate the counts, the charges, under same case number for the same defendant, in a vacuum. I don't think you can isolate one from the other. My position is that 2953.08 limits what a court of appeals can do. That being either modify the sentence itself, which it didn't do, or remand for sentencing de novo. I think the definition of de novo is quite clear. Obviously, that you start from square one, you do it all over again, and that's what's required under 2953.08. If Your Honor, I have no further questions, I'd submit on my client, Mr. Saxon, that this honorable court affirm the decision of the lower appellate court.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan. Mr. Regas, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'd ask this court to see that a de novo sentencing is still a de novo sentencing as to each count. Defense counsel's concerns over a resentencing hearing and starting over would pretend that no record of the case existed, no prior facts were determined, and nothing was brought to the court's attention in the past. That's not what occurs in any sentencing, and that's what shouldn't be considered in the resolution of this case. I'd ask that this court, because the sentence is both defined as one sanction or a combination of sanctions, this court needs to look to the procedure of the appellate procedure and the authorities granted to the courts.
Is this a matter that the legislature should add some language to that statute to clarify it? And let the legislature do it instead of us trying to impose a definition of sentence that reaches the objective you're trying to have us get to?
No, because the model, Your Honor, is such that under the sentencing Senate Bill 2, if you start from what a sentence is, which is a sanction for a criminal offense, one count, and then build from the bottom up in terms of thinking about the imposition of sentence, which is different than pre-Senate Bill 2 sentencing, which the court was to look at a range of sentences, pick one, consec or not, complete discretion. This is a completely different, there was a transplant. Senate Bill 2 transplanted a new set of analysis, a new way of looking at criminal sentencing. And by using sentence in the aggregate to justify vacating a sentence that was not in error is a vestige of the old sentencing law, which presumed the entire outlook, which the sentencing package is based upon. It's the premise that a defendant gets the time in the aggregate, and then the rest of the details are filled in. And I think Senate Bill 2 needs to be addressed from the bottom up and build a pyramid of a sentence.
Counsel, does the statute actually use the term de novo in 29-5308?
Where is it? I've been looking for that.
No, it does
I don't
not.
Believe it does.
We're all saying de novo, but
it says rehearing, does it not? A resentencing,
right? A resentencing. And, okay. And I think we've all jumped to the conclusion that because of the criminal rules, the presence of the defendant required the notification of victim, that if a count is to be sentenced, we start again.
But well, we have the sentencing hearing statute 29-29-19 that talks about a sentencing hearing will also cover a resentencing. So if you're saying that's where it comes from, I just wanted to make clear de novo does not appear in the appellate statute.
That's correct, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.